This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm your host, Conor O'Neill, joined this afternoon by Joe Thomas, Chris Beasley and Gav Buckland, as we look ahead to what is set to be a huge 6 weeks for Everton Football Club as the domestic action returns next week when Everton welcome Wolverhampton Wanderers to Goodison Park. But lads, I think we can all safely say we were engrossed last night watching the World Cup final. I think it's a tournament that comes under huge scrutiny. There's a lot of backlash around it. But the final, in terms of the spectacle for what it was, delivered. I think to start off, it'd be wrong if we didn't have a quick look back at that game. And Chris, I'll start with you, because as someone who I think has watched a lot of World Cup finals, certainly in my time, that was the best one I've ever seen.
To be fair, Gav must have watched more than me, but I've got my Argentinian shirt on as such today. It's not covered up. It was a great game, wasn't it? And I think it was the result that most people, certainly who I know, wanted. People wanted to see Lionel Messi finish with that elusive World Cup winners medal, and obviously France would have been the first team in 60 years to retain the trophy, but it had everything, didn't it? It looked like Argentina were going to stroll it, 2-0 up, looking comfortable. And then obviously two goals in the space of 90 seconds, whatever it was, just totally turned it on its head, went into extra time, more drama. Messi thought he'd done it again, only for Mbappe to get the hat-trick, obviously equal Jeff Hurst's record, getting a hat-trick in the final. And Going to penalties, I must have thought when it went to penalties, I thought from the psychological point of view, because France had come back on a couple of occasions, I probably fancied them to do it. But I was made up for Messi to do that. I mean, he was fantastic. I mean, 8 years ago, he got player of the tournament ahead of James Rodriguez, who was obviously top scorer at those finals. And I thought it's a bit of a nonsense, really, because he didn't really do much beyond the group stages. But he's obviously been phenomenal each game, scoring in every round this time round, and it's a fitting farewell to a career of one of the world's greatest players. You know, I'm not going to stick my neck out like some people have said that he is the best, but I think Henry Winter got it right personally when he said, you know, Pelé, Maradona and Messi are the three best players of all time, and maybe you can argue over what order they come in.
Gav, was you one of them sitting there yesterday hoping that the little man would get his big moments?
No, I'm not a fan. I don't know why. It's just I don't know why, and I'm not being concerned on anything. I mean, I must prefer Cristiano Ronaldo. I always like players with a bit more power and pace. You know, like the Brazilian Ronaldo would be my favourite out of any of them. And I don't like, shall we say, without getting too political, where Messi gets some of his money from as well. And I don't like the fawning in the media. I know we're part of the media, we're podcasting. I don't like the fawning in the national media and beyond, and television over them as well. So I would have shed no tears if they got beat yesterday, to be honest with you, for those reasons. And let's face it, you wouldn't have said it was a great game after 75 minutes, would you, really? It was dramatic, wasn't it? You know, it was the last 40 minutes of 10 minutes, 15 minutes of normal time and 30 extra time, and then penalties was as good as and dramatic as what you'll ever see, wouldn't it, really, to be fair? It was a real edge of the seat stuff. So at least he got his winner's medal. Compared to Maradona, I'd always have Maradona, but I think that's an 80. I think the one thing I'd always say is about Messi and Maradona is, don't know what the greatest of them is nobody took more talent for playing football on space than Maradona. I think that is beyond doubt in terms of playing the game, in terms of like playing football without a shadow of doubt. How you apply that talent is a completely different thing. But I'd say, unquestionably, Maradona has the best talent of any footballer I've ever seen. But yeah, Messi, yeah, it should please a lot of people. It was dramatic, wasn't it, really?
Well, game of opinions. I agree with Gav's point about Maradona. I agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Joe, I think in terms of whetting the appetite for the big return of the Premier League next Monday, it certainly did that, didn't it, for fans all over the globe, whether, you know, Everton, Liverpool, whoever, that certainly whet the appetite for what, you know, the big return of the domestic game next week.
I don't know, to be honest, Connor. I think a lot of Everton fans I've spoken to have been quite pleased to have had the World Cup to kind of and greater hide behind. And I think a lot of, I mean, I've been, obviously it's my job, I've been living Everton for the last 6 weeks, been out to Australia with them. You know, last week I was at Lincoln on a freezing Tuesday night watching the under-21s. You know, I've been with Anthony Gordon last week, been with Amadou Inanna and Asmir Begovic this morning. So obviously, you know, I haven't been able to escape from it, but I know a lot of other people have, and for legitimate reasons after the last week before we went. And I think, as much as I enjoyed watching the World Cup final last night, I must admit, as soon as it finished and I went on Twitter and all of a sudden all these people coming back on and saying, Everton are back, Everton are back. Now it's all about Boxing Day. And I was kind of looking ahead to Boxing Day a week today as we record and thinking, Everton are back, and bloody hell, like, that's going to be some game against Wolves. That is, like, it's no plain sailing, easy return, gentle walk back into the Premier League action. It's straight back with a massive game. It's going to be crucial to setting the tone for what, as you started the podcast by saying, is an absolutely huge 6 weeks, not just for Everton, but for Frank Lampard as well. So, you know, I think now everyone from outside the club, from outside the football industry, can kind of refocus their minds on Boxing Day, on Everton, on Wolves, on what's going on at Finch Farm, and what Frank Lampard will say at his press conference later this week, on what Wolves will do in the Carabao Cup this week, as we look at, you know, how their squad's looking and how Julian Lopetegui's looking, their new manager. And with all that comes the kind of, the excitement and the passion, but also the kind of, you know, I think that the nerves of what might be heading our way.
Joe used the word nerves there. Do you think there's almost a fear among Evertonians ahead of the restart next Monday, in that, given where the club found themselves in before this break, which, you know, does seem a long time ago now, but, you know, three defeats on the spin, you know, but on the Carabao Cup in the manner in which they did, and ultimately, you know, plummeting to one place and one point above the relegation zone, there's a bit of a fear that if things don't go well in these next 6 weeks, that it could be another long, long few months for Blues supporters.
Yeah, as I was talking to Michael Ball earlier, we've got a column coming up later, and I think we both agreed that the closer we get to this Boxing Day fixture, Everton Wolves, the bigger it seems to be getting, the more magnitude it seems to be built. And I know that Frank has never sort of liked to overplay the importance of individual fixtures, but come on, I think this one, I think they need a reaction. I mean, it was twofold this break. It stopped the rot for Everton and what was a disastrous last week before the World Cup break. Everton was sort of ticking around. It wasn't spectacular, but it was kind of, you could see the progression from last season and they were doing enough. Let's remember if, I know it's a big if, but, you know, if they've beaten Leicester City, they've gone into the top half of the table and albeit temporarily even gone above Liverpool. But three successive defeats in those last 7 days were disastrous, really, the way they concertinaed that bottom half of the division and left Everton a point above the relegation zone. I mean, on the one hand, you know, on paper, it's your easiest game of the season because it's at home to the bottom club, but we know it's not like that. We know it's not going to be like that. As Joe said, his first Premier League game for a new manager at Wolves, they're going to be wanting to make a big impression there. And if they were to win at Goodison, which they did last season, of course, Connor Cody, of all people, who obviously can't play against his parent club, got the winner that day. That was a very flat day at Goodison. You know, if they were to do that again, they'd be within a point of Everton, and things really would be looking bleak. I think Everton also need to get a result ahead of that New Year's Eve trip to Manchester City, and there's other tough away games to come in January too. So, yeah, I think Michael, when he was speaking to me, Michael Ball, was pointing at these three home games, not just Wolves, but Brighton and Southampton as well, and the importance of these three forthcoming home fixtures over the next month.
Gavin, I know you made this point on a podcast before the World Cup break about the teams in and around Everton having made changes or were making changes in terms of management. Obviously, Wolves are one of them clubs. It'll be Locatelli's first Premier League game in charge. Obviously, Wolves played Gillingham, I think it was on Thursday night in the Carabao Cup. But it always seems to be Everton, doesn't it, where these managers crop up in the first game. I don't know if this is just me, but it always seems to be Everton where, you know, the new manager starts as Ray, you know, there's always something riding on these games when Everton are in town or when a club comes to Everton.
Yeah, I think that 31st raid that took me head in 1958 when Bill Dixon took charge of Spurs on the Saturday morning, they played Everton in the afternoon and they stuck 10 past us. I think ever since then it's been a day that, we're always on the rough end of the first games. Yeah, I think Pochettino was one, wasn't he? I think with Southampton was quite a few. I don't know. It's going to be slightly different though, isn't it? Because of the time scales between the appointments and the game. So I'm not sure whether that plays into it. I mean, there'd be a lot of, you know, going on the break for the players. It'd be like a lot of new managers. You're coming back after 6 week breaks. It's like, please, you know, come back to, you know, pre-season, isn't it? So I'm not sure whether that really applies here, to be honest with you. But the general point does apply though, doesn't it? Is, you know, the rare conversations I've had about Everton over the World Cup when I've not been slagging Messi off is, seriously, is the fact that compared to, and I don't want to compare it to last year, but I will, is that last year you always felt that there's probably two teams who were probably always going to go down, you know, whatever happens, and then one of the other places was up for grabs. This season, as you've seen so far, I don't think it's that clear cut. So in many respects, it's going to be a tougher season than last season, even though for the improvements that flank has brought this year. And then I spoke to you, Joe, about tightening up the midfield and the defence when he was in Australia. So even allowing for that, I still think it's going to be a tougher campaign. And there's a couple of teams who were in near the bottom a few weeks ago. We were Aston Villa and Leicester, who were flying hard, I suppose, we want the better phrase. But that just shows you for us how a couple of results can change things. And we've got three winnable home games. If we get 9 points in those three matches, which we're capable of, we're having a conversation, aren't we, in mid-January, where we're back in mid-table and hopefully in the fourth round of the FA Cup as well. And so it can't change. Basically what I'm saying there, Colin, is it can change very quickly, can't it? Because the concertina was that word that was just used, wasn't it? I don't know what it means, but it sounds good. There are a lot of clubs quite close together. A couple of wins, you're mid-table, aren't you? And you've got a bit of confidence like happened to us. And your aspirations are different, aren't they, for the second half of the season?
Joe, I think that's the important thing, isn't it? Because I think, you know, probably certainly I'm guilty of this, is we always maybe look at the negative and what the worst thing that could happen and what, you know, what could potentially happen in the long run in terms of a negative way. But that's the other side, what Gav made a good point there, isn't it? Is, you know, if Everton get a couple of wins in these next three home, you know, they win the next three home games, maybe pick up a point on the road, all of a sudden momentum shifts and Everton will be, you know, looking up and will be comfortably mid-table and not nervously looking over the shoulders at, you know, possibly a tough couple of months that could lie ahead.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. I mean, some of the kind of the longer pieces that I've done over the what's effectively been a winter break, you know, you have to kind of set the right context for it. And yeah, Chris has already alluded to it. Go into that Leicester game, the talk wasn't really of a relegation battle. It was talk of being in the top half of the table, should Everton get a win, which felt eminently possible going into that game. If the World Cup break had finished 180 Premier League, it started 180 Premier League minutes earlier, most Everton fans, I think, would have spent this last 6 weeks in a relatively positive mood, looking ahead to January and thinking what possibilities could lie ahead if Everton can either get Dominic Calvert-Lewin fit or bring in a few more attacking reinforcements or a little bit of both. Obviously, the manner in which things unfolded that last week have put such a negative kind of shadow over the 6 weeks that have followed. But it is important to remember that, you know, as both the contributors have said so far today, you know, that bottom half of the table and even the bottom half of the top end of the table, like, it's stacked together. Everton have, you know, they've got a handful of, if you take Man City out of the equation, they've got a handful of very, very winnable games going into the middle of January, even up to West Ham away. You know, it's a game that they can take points away from. So it's in Everton, you know, what we have to be pleased with, or it is in Everton's hands. Everton have got the fixtures to be able to pull themselves well clear of trouble for a couple of weeks and get in, you know, get to the back end of January and really kind of building some momentum for a season. And I think that's kind of, you know, for me, for Everton, the main aim this season has to be kind of getting to, obviously it's getting safe, but getting safe at a point early enough where they can plan for next season in advance. I think that was one of the things that they really struggled with last year. They effectively, because it took so long to guarantee Premier League safety, because it came so late in the day, they effectively conceded 3-4 weeks of transfer planning and forward planning and plotting and negotiating and things like that on a lot of their rivals. So they, you know, they conceded that head start. And I think, for me, I think that Frank Lampard can be successful at Everton. I think he can help take the club forward. I think he can lead real progress at the club. But in order to be able to do so, I think he's got to get to this summer first. He's got to ride out this little storm now. And he's got to make it to the summer, because I think the summer is, obviously, he's had the summer transfer window last year, was able to let go of a few players. We've already seen, in terms of this January, you know, Rondon's gone, which is a significant departure and one that they'll be very pleased with at Finch Farm to have done. As much as Rondon may well have been a model professional, he clearly wasn't part of the first team plans there. And then there are a couple more contracts at end in this summer, which just give Frank Lampard and Kevin Farwell that freedom to carry on the next stage of their transition. But they've just got to get there first. And I think, obviously, that game against Wolves is huge. The games that follow are huge. But talk about three wins. They take 7 points in those first three home games and they'll be, you know, 15th and above, and things will be looking relatively positive. They can supplement that with a few, you know, incomings in the January transfer window. Then, you know, there's no reason why this can't turn into a very good season for Everton.
He's, you know, Joel name-checked him there, but one name who Everton appear to have got, you know, back to some sort of fitness, whether he will be fit enough to play against Wolves next Monday remains to be seen. Jamie is another one who's returned back training after picking up a knock at the Sydney Super Cup. The six-week break, you know, although a lot of fans were against it first, for Everton, that's really coming at a good time in terms of where they were punch-wise, but in terms of being able to bring back injured players and get, you know, like Dominic Calvert-Lewin back fit, it's been crucial, hasn't it? Because they've not felt the force of having 6 or 8 weeks without their main centre forwards.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been bad, wouldn't it, if they'd have had to, you know, go on the back of those three defeats and then obviously Calvert-Lewin unavailable. Remains to be seen just how sharp he is and the rest of them come Boxing Day, because it's a big period. I think whether he's fit or not, I think Everton need to bring in attacking reinforcements in January, whether that, you know, I certainly think that that's some sort of orthodox striker and then maybe some more creative attacking midfield player. And we use that plural because I just don't think you can depend on it. It'd be great if he could play the majority of the games the second half of the season and get back to his best, because he was a very durable player, you know, not too long ago, just a couple of years ago. You know, he did hardly miss a game, but just given his recent track record, I think you can't take that risk of not having extra reinforcements. It'll also be interesting to see what kind of work they've done with Neil Mopay over this break. I mean, he got his goal in Australia, albeit against, you know, a much lesser opposition than he'd be facing here in the Premier League. But yeah, it's clear what Everton's issue was. I mean, last season, 66 goals was it they conceded. Lampard made some priority to bring in those two centre-backs. One, of course, obviously Connor Cody can't play against his parent club, Wolves. But yeah, it's easy to see where the problems have been this year. Just haven't scored enough goals. Wolves, of course, the only team in the Premier League to score fewer goals than Everton.
Gav, the beast was on a day, but it is vital, isn't it, that Everton bring in some sort of attack and reinforcements in January. You know, obviously all the focus will be on the games and what's to come. But, you know, off the pitch, this is a big month, isn't it, in terms of it, next month is a big month in terms of getting people in and making sure that Everton's squad is strong enough moving into the final few months of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would think an attacking player would be priority, but caveat it, of course, that, you know, how much money we got to spend here. And you spoke there about getting people off the books as well, possibly in January. So it's how much we've got to spend in terms of how it's accounted for, but how much cash we've actually got within the business to pay people. So it may be loans, mightn't it? Something like that, perhaps. But you, given the fair wind, you'd expect a couple of players in, certainly a striker and possibly an attacking midfielder. But what at the same time is, sometimes you don't score. It's not just down to your lack of striking options, is that you don't score goals. You know, it's getting that attacking blend right, isn't it? And you'd like to think over the 5 or 6 weeks, we've been looking at ways of getting that attacking blend right in the final third, because you could bring Messi in, couldn't you? Like, but if you've got nobody feeding them and out wide, it's going to be a struggle. So we have to get a way of playing that maximises the opportunities we can give for the striker. That's the only thing that makes it worthwhile for me. So it's not just a case of bringing a striker in, it's making it work for the team. And it would be interesting, isn't it? Because Mopé and Calvert-Lewin are different types of strikers, aren't they? You know, which works for you if you want to play them together. Doesn't work, can work against you if you're alternating them. So it would be interesting to see if they bring another attacker in. Who is it like? Is it like a Mopé type player or a Calvert-Lewin type player or somebody in between? So it's that aspect to it, isn't it, that I think is intriguing. What type of striker would you bring in? And then that depends whether they're available or not. But yeah, you are right. We do need to bring two or three in, striker and attacking midfielder for me. But I'd like to, you know, to make that work, we've got to see people going out, haven't you? And also as well, I suspect in what we'll spend in January, we'll end up may having to do what we did last year. I think somebody who's a sale of assets will go at the end of June.
Just what you said there, Gav, about, you know, tackling creativity, because I know you've made this point before on pods, but are you hoping that in the time Frank Lampard had to work with Everton's players, and obviously some of them were available because of the World Cup and stuff, to see a little bit more in terms of coaching and style of play and patterns of play moving forward? Because
yeah,
I know you said it, but a lot of other fans have been quite critical of Frank in that they don't really see a plan in terms of when Everton get the ball and go forward. It seems a little bit kind of one-dimensional and very kind of, there's no structure to how they seem to be.
No, but I mean, the counter to that, to the criticism, is saying, well, I tell you what, just play like we did against Crystal Palace, and it's over 90 minutes in terms of attack, and maybe scored, what, two or three great goals. So it's obviously there. It's just getting it out to the team. I know it would be slightly difficult with Onana and Garner-Gay being on World Cup duty, but you know, I don't think it should have been a passive thing. Should it, the 6 weeks off, we should have been getting at the players and the wingers and so on, getting them to, you know, understand their roles better. Because is it still right, McNeil, the three wingers haven't got an assist in the Premier League between them this season? Is that right?
I think yes. Oh, it might be one, I think, between the three.
Well, it's not many, is it? You would expect a lot more than that. So, yeah, it's striking for me, yeah. But I think we need to, it's getting it to all blend in together, isn't it, really?
Joe, I know you've wrote quite extensively in the last 6 weeks about Everton's kind of transfer plans and what, you know, Frank Lampard and Kevin Thelwell are working on. They've got a list of players and, you know, they are in constant communication. But do you think it's almost a big test now for the two of them that they've got to get this right, because given they've had time to work together, given they've had time to plan things out, you know, I suspect, you know, since the summer window started, Lampard will have known areas where he wants to improve. It's a big test for him now in terms of, you know, making that into a reality and getting people in and actually going to add something to the Blues squad.
It is a test. I think it's a test for a number of reasons. The January transfer window is always notoriously difficult. The reality is good players who are settled at clubs don't really want to move for obvious reasons. You throw into that the fact that you've got the World Cup as well and what that does to players' valuations and the knock-on effect that has to the clubs where, you know, and the impact it has on players who might not have been at the World Cup but their teammates have is also going to be significant. I mean, look, Everton want to bring in two attackers during the January transfer window. That is the plan. I think they're hopeful of doing it without having to really secure any outgoings. I think there's a belief that they can bring in two attackers of the quality that they need, albeit it may be on loan deals, it may be kind of carefully structured agreement in terms of how they pay. It may be that they have to be savvy with who they get and how they get it. But like, yeah, they hope that they can bring in two attacking players. They had the profiles before the World Cup. They had a shortlist drawn up at the World Cup. They didn't go into the World Cup heavily scouting anybody that was going to be involved in the World Cup. They were keeping a watching brief on it, and obviously there'll be players that may have caught the eye, but going into the World Cup, they weren't going into there with tracking someone very, very closely. And to be honest, I take a little bit of heart from that, because I think one of the, you know, when I've spoken to the Frank, one of the words that he's used when he's trying to describe how they want to be in the transfer market is calculated. And the reality is that if they've got a shortlist drawn up and the top five players are at the World Cup, well, you're leaving so much to chance and fortune that you don't know what's going to happen with them. You know, they might have cracking World Cups, and you know, they might, you know, their value might increase to the point where they're no longer attainable by Everton. They might get injured in the World Cup, and therefore all of a sudden they can't do a job immediately, or defects might show up in their game, which make you question whether or not you want to get them. And all of a sudden, you know, you spent 6 weeks going into the World Cup, carefully curating your shortlist, and then over the course of a couple of weeks, it's all ripped to shreds because, you know, all of a sudden you don't want any of those players, or you can't get them. So, you know, I think they have a clear plan for what they want to do. You know, there's, as I say, two attacking signings is the priority. There's going to be a big emphasis on outgoings. We've already seen that with Rondon. But obviously, outgoings depends on who wants players, who's willing to go, what deals can be done. I think outgoings at this stage would probably be used to, I think they can get two attacking players. And if they get outgoings that they want, they might see, you know, they'll be fluid how things are going. They might be able to get improvements elsewhere depending on what they're going to do. So, but that's the problem with the World Cup. You know, the knock-on effect is all of a sudden, like we saw it at the back end of the summer transfer window, you know, Mohamed Kudus, you know, you look at the season he's had with Ajax, the goals he scored in the Champions League, the impression he's made at the World Cup with, you know, with Ghana has been, you know, sensational. He was right on the cusp of signing for Everton, but then all of a sudden, Manchester United have a terrible start to the season. They're looking to make emergency moves in the transfer market, and all of a sudden, they're willing to pay an astronomical fee that Ajax can't turn down for Antony. And because of that, because of something that's not in Everton's control whatsoever, all of a sudden, Kudos deal gets knocked on the head because Ajax don't want to lose another attacking midfield player. They don't want to lose Antony and Kudos. And it's all those types of ripple effects that's going to affect the business in January. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens. Because obviously what we're going through now is, you know, players have been returning to their squads from World Cup duty, and they'll continue to do so over the next week or so. And managers up and down Europe are going to be reassessing their squad and looking at who's injured, who's fit, what can they get. All of a sudden, this player might be in demand. So, you know, now I've got to counter to the fact that I might lose him, so I can't let him go, or I've got to find a replacement. So it's going to be a really, really tricky transfer window. But hopefully what Frank Lampard and Kevin and Fowler have done is spotted that early and planned it in such a way that they can almost, you know, they limited the risk of what the World Cup could do on their January plans. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. But it's clearly a test. Like, the, you know, we all know that they need reinforcements. That's clear. There's only so much improvement they can do at Finch Farm on the training ground. This is going to be a test. It's going to be a test on almost three areas, really. The first one is, can they get Dominic Calvert-Lewin back fit? And, you know, what role does he play? The second is, can they work out a way to play with Neil Mopy? Certainly, you know, until any signs come in, because it will probably take a while to get things over the line. Can they work out a way of playing without Dominic Calvert-Lewin? Because I think that's what they have to do now. I think, yeah, Dominic Calvert-Lewin could have a brilliant future with Everton. You know, he could get back fit, find form, find momentum and score goals. But it felt like, I know Neil Mopy's had a lot of criticism, it feels, over the winter break for not scoring the goals, not creating, you know, goals in the back end of the first half of the season. But the reality is Everton didn't play to his strengths. It felt to me like Everton were almost always, they were always on the cusp of Dominic Calvert-Lewin coming back. And as a result of that, they always played for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And when Mopy came in, they still played as if they were playing to Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He's such a different type of player that you can't do that. So in these early games, and what I hope they've been doing at Finch Farm is been training in a manner to hopefully get the best out of Neil Mopy on the chance that they need to rely upon him as their main striker, at least in the early time of the season. And then obviously the third factor is, yeah, what they can do in the transfer market, what reinforcements they can do, what can get a good summer transfer window. You know, you take, you know, Dominic, I know it's all ifs and buts, and if Dominic Calvert-Lewin doesn't pick up the injury on the eve of the season, I think we're looking at a very different start to the season. I certainly think they're at least a couple of points better off than where they are now, and if a couple more points would make a big difference in the table and where they are for the reasons that we've already discussed. You know, the Idrissa Gueye signing became a protracted nightmare. Well, you know, in an alternative reality, Everton have already got Idrissa Gueye at when the season starts, because that shouldn't have taken as long as it did. Dominic Calvert-Lewin doesn't get injured, and all of a sudden Everton look a lot stronger at the start of the season. And again, it could be a very different opening 15 games. Unfortunately, that's not been the case for Everton. And as a result, Kevin and Frank have to react in the transfer market. But the other thing that they've got to do is, and this is going to be the really another interesting element, is they have to, and I think there's an appetite from everyone at Everton to move away from the type of spending that they were doing in the early Farhad Moshiri years, where they had a problem and they just spent whatever money it took to go and solve that short-term problem without thinking the long-term. Everton can't afford to do that, and there's a desire not to do that. So they need to find immediate answers to short-term problems, because they need goals. They need to stay in the Premier League. They need to be more creative. They need to be more ruthless in front of goal. But what they can't do is they can't just go and start spending money willy-nilly. There has to be a long-term plan for each of the signings that they do come in. It has to be almost like a legacy process as well. So it's going to be a really tough January. It's going to be a really interesting one for us to watch. And obviously, Everton's Premier League life, you know, depends on it. But when you look at the January transfer market, when you look at elements of the way they start the season, there are reasons to be positive. You know, there have been signs of sensible people making sensible decisions that follow a plan. So hopefully, we'll see a continuation of that from Frank and Kevin, you know, over the next few weeks. And hopefully, we'll see, you know, that start to bear fruit on the pitch and in the results.
Bees, in terms of plans, Frank Lampard is going to have to plant a face water out on the field. He's become arguably Everton's Mr. Reliable so far this season, but due to the terms of his loan deal, because he can't play against his permanent club on Boxing Day. Michael Keane, Yerry Mina, Mason Holgate, Ben Godfrey, just some of the options that Frank Lampard has at his disposal in place of Cody. Who would you like to see given the nod to Goodison Park next Monday, obviously to line up alongside James Tarkos, can we imagine?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I'm not sure whether my choice will necessarily tally with the managers. I mean, but short answer would be Michael Keane, who I think would be the one to slot in for me. But Ben Godfrey's obviously come back from the injury now. I'm never too sure these days where we're up to with Yerry Mina, unfortunately. Mason Holgate might even be ahead of Michael Keane in the manager's thoughts. But of course, he had that awful display in the Carabao Cup game at Bournemouth. Not that anyone covered themselves in glory on either of those trips to the South Coast. So yeah, I go for Michael Keane personally. I know they're now, you know, there are major doubts over whether he's going to remain Everton the second half of the season. There seems to be some loan interest in him, and you know, he's gone from being more or less a regular, hasn't he? In his first. How long has he been there now? 5 years now, isn't it, since he came to Everton? This is the first time he's not been a regular in the side. I think Michael Keane, when you ask him to do what you know Michael Keane's good at, you know, the sense of half basics, I think he's very effective. So, I mean, he would be my choice whether or not he's got a longer-term future at the club.
Gav, you with Bees? I saw the way you looked at Bees when he said...
Yeah.
Are you on the same hymn sheet as Bees, or would you go with one of the others?
I wasn't expecting that, but Chris put a perfect case for him, really, because there's not a striking option, is it? You know, not a striking option, centre half option probably to use, isn't it? I mean, I personally, if he was fit, I'd get Mina on the pitch, to be fair, but I think they said they don't know where we are up to. Fitness, I don't think we've ever been up. Maybe not where we're up to, but Mina's fitness. I get Mina on the pitch, but I don't know. I mean, I tell you why I get Mina on the pitch, to show he was fit if he wanted to try and get rid of him in January, to be honest with you. I think Keane, Holgate, Keane is an interesting choice, and I wouldn't disagree with that, because he'll come and do a job for you, won't he? Keane, as Chris said, but ideally for me, Mina, for a number of reasons.
It's a big call, though, isn't it, Gav, for Frank Lampard to make, because given how well Tarkowski and Cody have been so far this season, you know, they've struck up such a perfect partnership and being so resilient for such a big game to throw one of them, you know, for someone to come off in from the coals, is a big ask.
Yeah, absolutely. Cody and Tarkowski would have had played most games, have they, since Connor came? Is it fair to everyone? But the only thing I'd say is it goes back to the 6-week thing, isn't it? It's going to be a little bit. Everybody's going to be in that boat, aren't they, to a degree, who comes back and plays on Boxing Day. It's going to be like the first game of the season, so there's going to be a bit of rustiness all around. To be honest with you, so it won't be as much of a challenge as what it would be if it was just part of the regular season. So perhaps not that case in terms of being a massive challenge for them. I actually think, to be fair, I think Cody and Tarkowski were showing signs of rustiness and a little bit needed the rest before the break. But it'd be interesting to see who comes in. There's three or four candidates there. I get Keane, definitely. Holgate, I say, was a bit, didn't do himself any justice at Bournemouth, but Godfrey's sort of in and around playing, isn't he? I believe, but yeah, meaner for me, but I wouldn't say he knows up with Keane.
Joe, it's one vote for Michael Keane, one vote for Keane. So you've got the custom vote.
Well, obviously, where we're at with Mina and Godfrey is they're both back training with the first team. You can see that from the videos and the images put out by the club over, you know, the back end of last week. So they're both close to full fitness if they're not already fully fit. Ben Godfrey's been playing minutes throughout the break for the under-21s. His last run out was against Mansfield in the Papa John's Trophy. I think he might have played in another game after that, but I was there for the Mansfield game. He looked all right. I mean, that's 30th of November, I think, that game. He still looked a little bit rusty then, but that was a month ago. I think in terms of the kind of the player profile in most similar type of centre-back to Cody, I mean, it's hard to have a look, but I think, you know, there is a compelling case for Keane. I think Mina's the best centre-back of those going. Obviously, again, with injuries, I almost go for a third option that hasn't been mentioned. And I wonder if, bearing in mind how significant this game is, bearing in mind the injury concerns, which will still be, even if they appear to be fully fit, you know, we'll still linger over Ben Godfrey and we'll still linger over Yerry Mina. And bearing in mind what we've seen from Frank Lampard in the past, like, I think it's fair to say that he's a cautious manager. I think he plays it safe. I think he'll go into this game looking at it. This is a game that's imperative that we don't lose it rather than a must win. And for that reason, I wonder if what he might do is revert to playing three centre-backs to try and mitigate some of the risk around bringing back players from injury and some of the uncertainty about partnerships. He's not sure about what the makeup of that three would be. I'm not entirely sure, but he could go for something, you know, like, obviously, you've got Tarkowski there. Maybe you'll put Mina and Godfrey in together. So, you know, you've got Mina for the obvious skills that he brings, and you've got Godfrey for the pace that he can offer around the back. Or, you know, say maybe Holgate will get a look in. But I wouldn't be surprised if that was his move come Boxing Day. If, you know, an hour comes out from kickoff and we look at that team sheet when it comes out, and actually there isn't a way in which he solves a problem and doesn't have a concern. And therefore, I wondered the safest thing that he might end up doing is playing, you know, essentially five at the back with three centre backs. I think, you know, we talk about injured players, we talk about the fear of, say, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that the club would take decent bids for, if they were forthcoming, for either Keane or Mina. And obviously playing them risks the chances of them getting injured or having bad displays and getting themselves out the shop window potentially. I think Everton's situation at the moment is such that they have to put that out the back of their mind, and what they have to do, certainly for these first few games when they come back, Obviously, if they get the results that they need, it might change come the middle of January. They have to put out the 11 players that they think can give them the best opportunity to get 3 points. That has to be the plan at the moment, you know. So I think he may well go five at the back, three centre backs, and that might be the solution to the Connor Cody being absent problem. I mean, one thing that I would say is this is a problem that they've known about since, well, obviously the moment they signed him, that they've had 6 weeks to think about this. So give or take, you know, there's been a few injuries and that hinders planning, and there'll be a bit of uncertainty about, well, there would have been a bit of uncertainty about when Godfrey can come back. One thing there is there's no excuse for them not having planned for this, because it's one of the few things that they could go into war saying, well, we know this is something that we've got to address. So whoever the partnership is, whatever the formation is, you would think that they spent, you know, a considerable amount of time last week and hopefully this week thinking about it, how to mitigate it and how to put themselves in the best position to get a result on Boxing Day.
Gents, just before we finish, there was some big news today. And that was that Jordan Pickford was crowned Everton Fans' Player of the Year for 2022. Bees, I'll start with you because I know that you backed Jordan Pickford in our little panel vote to be crowned this year's champion after Dominic Calvert-Lewin claimed the honour last year. So I take it you were a happy man when the news broke that at 12 o'clock today, Bees, that Jordan Pickford would scoop the vote?
Yeah, but I thought that, I mean, we all, between you and myself, we had four candidates and we both picked a couple each, didn't we? And I think that realistically it was always going to be between Jordan Pickford and Alex Iwobi. It was two main candidates for the crown. I just think that Jordan's consistency over the year, I mean, it's ironic actually that he went into the World Cup break with the back of that blooper at Bournemouth. But I mean, despite what, you know, he's many critics and a bit further afield than ourselves might say about him, he's been tremendously consistent for club and country for a long time now. And as Frank Lampard even himself said, you know, on that Aspilicueta got save of the season. Frank said during the pre-season trip to USA, he told an audience in Washington, D.C., he thought that was probably the save of the Premier League era. It really was that good. And all I would add to that is that I know Gav and I have been waxing lyrical about Big Nev not too long ago. And that, you know, that was as good as anything I've ever seen from Neville Southall. So I can't pay him any higher compliment than that.
Gav, can Alex Iwobi, Richarlison, Anthony Gordon have any grinds, any disappointment that they didn't get the nod over Jordan Pickford?
Did you mention Richarlison? Yeah.
They were the four nominees, Gordon, and Alex Iwobi.
I think him and Anthony Gordon are our leading goal scorers this calendar year, are they, I think, in the Premier League? I think you've got to give it to Jordan, haven't you, who's been consistent all season. But big shout for Alex, who came back when was the Newcastle games that February, was it March?
Just St. Patrick's Day.
He's had a good 9 months, hasn't he, Alex? Excellent. Yeah. I mean, did the one, if you were really, I mean, Mikalenko hasn't done anything wrong, has he, really, as well, as you say. It's between Pickford and Iwobi, but I think Pickford's provided a few more standout moments, not just the save off, you know, the save against Chelsea, the several games at the end of last season and this season when he's been outstanding, he's won us points. So he's the outstanding candidate for me and totally well deserved.
About yourself, Joe, you in there going to make a hat trick of Jordan Pickford backers, or do you think Alex Iwobi was hard done to? Because I certainly do.
I think it can only really go for Pickford. I think Richarlison, I know he hasn't been there since the summer, but he deserves a lot of credit because, you know, the way he battled and worked hard to keep Everton from relegation. You know, what was significant, obviously, he's only got the first 6 months of the year to his name. Iwobi's been fantastic. You know, his renaissance, his revival story at Everton is superb, and it's one that I think everybody takes a lot of joy from. Anthony Gordon's emergence also shouldn't be overlooked. You know, I think that, he had a really good breakthrough year last season. I think there have been times when he's shown how important he can be to this Everton side this season, you know, albeit they were a lot earlier, you know, the goals against Brentford, the goals against Leeds. But I think it's got to be Pickford, you look back at those Chelsea saves, not just those Chelsea. So I remember that huge win that followed it up away at Leicester, and he made a couple of big saves there. the win against Manchester United that Anthony Gordon scored in. He made a big save from Ronaldo in the last minute. He made a couple of good saves from Palace, even at 3-2 to Everton on that last game of the season. And then again, you look at this season so far. I mean, some of his saves in the Merseyside derby were phenomenal. And then I remember being at Fulham a couple of weeks ago with you, Connor, and that save from Willian was absolutely just breathtaking, and he followed up with another kind of characteristic flying save from Mitrovic. So in terms of your highlights reel, I think especially bearing in mind how few goals Evan scored, when it comes to the highlights reel, no one's got a better one of those than Jordan Pickford for this season and over the course of 12 months. And yeah, there have been frustrating moments. It was a shame that the penalty against Spurs after Everton had executed the game plan well for the first hour there. And obviously Bournemouth is probably the worst one. You know, that kind of sparked the downfall on the last day of the season, on the last day of the first part of the season, which Evan could really have done without. But, you know, for me, it can only be Jordan Pickford. I think he's a brilliant goalkeeper. And again, one of the other interesting conversations that we're going to be picking up probably over the next few weeks is where his contract negotiations are up to, because Frank's always been very positive about them. But let's be honest, there's probably a few Champions League and Champions League chasing clubs that are probably starting to look at their goalkeepers, at their long-term goalkeepers at the moment, and are thinking, yeah, they might be coming to the end of their tenure. And Jordan Pickford, especially with where his contract is at, is probably one of those goalkeepers at the forefront of their thinking when they think of something they can a world-class keeper, or a keeper who's certainly capable of world-class moments, who might be attainable for the clubs that have got serious money. So it will be interesting to see that. Although the Croatian goalkeeper, I think he's a Dynamo Zagreb, isn't he? Had an excellent World Cup. Yeah. So he's a much cheaper alternative his performance in the World Cup might help Everton retain Jordan Pickford, I suppose. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens there long term. But for me, yeah, Pickford's been sensational for the most part this calendar year for Everton. And as we keep saying, when everybody else questions it, for to be honest, the last few years for Everton.
Gents, we will leave things there. I think we've chewed the fat enough overall things Everton, despite having very little to reflect on given the 6 weeks break that we've just all endured. But of course, Everton will be back in action next Monday when they welcome Wolves to Goodison Park. And we should be back on Friday to preview that match and look back on Frank Lampard's pre-Wolves press conference, where we'll expect some injury news and transfer latest. But for today, Gav, Bees, Joe, thanks very much for joining me. You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.